The Chinese government is clearly angry with the U.S. government over its passage of the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act.
China pushes on human rights and trade. It's Tuesday, December 3rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, community radio gives a voice to India's women. We take another view at an Asian section of Los Angeles. Online shopping deals abound. The art of rebuilding a city. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Donald Trump is striking an optimistic tone on reaching a trade deal with China, despite Beijing's opposition to a law Trump recently signed that expresses support for pro-democracy activists in Hong Kong. The Chinese want to make a deal. We'll see what happens, the president told reporters Monday. The U.S. leader signed the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act last week, prompting stern protests from China, which announced Monday it has decided to suspend reviewing the applications for U.S. warships to go to Hong Kong for rest and recuperation. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said it is slapping sanctions on U.S.-based non-governmental organizations that have acted, quote, badly during the recent protests in Hong Kong. NGOs affected by the sanctions include Human Rights Watch, the National Endowment for Democracy, and Freedom House. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with the director of China Operations for the Human Rights Watch, Sophie Richardson.
Among the actions that China took over the past 12 to 24 hours was to choose a couple of their most unfavorite NGOs operating in China and saying they're going to put sanctions on them. What can you tell us about what this is about and what these sanctions are?
Well, I'd love to be able to answer that question, but we have no idea what sanctions they're referring to. Nothing has been formally communicated to us, and we have no sense of what measures they have in mind. So, if and when we get clarity, we'll certainly respond to that. But I think this is a good example of how difficult it is for the Chinese government to get its head around the idea that civil society groups operate completely independently of government. And by that, I mean, China is clearly angry, the Chinese government is clearly angry with the U.S. government over its passage of the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, but it's choosing to retaliate, or say it's going to retaliate, against independent organizations, not against the U.S. government, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. They haven't been in communication with you either, does it?
Nope, not so much. But, you know, let's think back to, for example, the Chinese government's punishment of the Norwegian government over the Norwegian Nobel Committee, again, a completely independent organization, awarding the 2010 Nobel Peace Prize to Chinese literary critic, government critic, Liu Xiaobo. So it's not a new problem, but it's also just completely unclear what they have in mind.
What do you think you have done or not done in China, and you're the one to know, that could have precipitated such a move?
Well, we are, you know, clearly very critical of the Chinese government over its human rights abuses, the vast majority of them committed against people inside China, but also increasingly against people beyond China's borders. In these remarks today, they seem particularly angered over what they say is involvement in the protests in Hong Kong. That's just patently untrue. You know, what we do in Hong Kong and in the mainland is what we do in the rest of the world. We investigate and expose human rights violations, and we make suggestions about how to fix those problems, plain and simple.
So it shouldn't surprise you they have chosen you.
No, but I also think it's a classic play, you know, from an authoritarian government's playbook to try to distract attention away from its own culpability for serious human rights violations. And that, you know, if Beijing is really deeply concerned about people in Hong Kong, it should be working to secure their rights, not trying to foist blame for problems off on international organizations that are themselves working to secure those rights.
Is there anything that HRW has done in direct communication with the Hong Kong protesters?
Well, I mean, look, we talk to everybody. We talk to protesters. We talk to people in the government. We interview people, you know, who may in whatever way be involved in the protest to try to get a complete picture of whether human rights are being respected or not. But we're hardly out there organizing the protests. That's not what we do.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Sophie Richardson, China Director for Human Rights Watch. These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Trump optimistic on China trade deal despite differences on Hong Kong. Philippine capital warned as strong typhoon approaches. Putin and Xi oversee launch of landmark Russian gas pipeline to China. Australia injured koala fundraising sets charity record. Once almost extinct in Japan, this dog breed thrives in Taiwan. You can find more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, and also by visiting the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. President Trump has indicated he is noncommittal about a forthcoming agreement with China on a trade deal, but says Beijing wants to find common ground. The two sides face a December 15th deadline on the implementation of 15% tariffs on consumer goods from China. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross told the Fox Business Channel Monday that if there's no agreement by then, no concessions will be made.
You have a logical deadline, December 15th. If nothing happens between now and then, the president has made quite clear he'll put the tariffs in, the increased tariffs.
Ross says while the president was right in his assessment of the situation, the United States can take its time.
You don't have a deal on anything till you have a deal on everything. So they're making progress, but it's one step forward, one step backward. I do think the president is 100% right. They want to make a deal. Question is, do they want to make a deal we can live with?
U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross speaking on the Fox News Channel. Happening now in Asia, U.S. President Donald Trump is striking an optimistic tone on reaching that trade deal with China. Despite Beijing's opposition to a law Trump recently signed, it expresses support for pro-democracy activists in Hong Kong. Major financial markets did not share the optimism and were down Monday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. A community radio in one of northern India's most backward districts is empowering women both by encouraging them to work at the radio station and helping them tackle issues such as domestic violence in a patriarchal society. Anjana Pasricha visited the radio station in Haryana State's Mewat district to see the transformative role it is playing across 170 villages that it reaches.
Assalamualaikum Sathyo, Namaskar, main hu Farin aur aap sabka swagat kar.
When this young radio jockey welcomes listeners to Radio Mewat, thousands of women tune in. Farin is a rare exception in these Muslim-dominated patriarchal villages where women are not allowed to work, be seen with men, or even be heard. It took months to overcome her parents' resistance and join the radio.
The villagers told them, "Why are you not marrying your daughter? She's so old. Who will marry her if she takes a job?"
2 years into her radio career, as Farin focuses on issues such as domestic violence, she considers herself lucky compared to other girls.
"Thank God I did not get married. Some husbands don't earn. Some have deserted them. I tell them to tune into our program. We can help you."
तो मैं उनके लिए बताती हूँ कि हमारा रेडियो मेवात पर कार्यक्रम चलता है हिंसा कोनो, जिसमें हम महिलाओं की मदद करते हैं।
The message is not confined to the radio. Farin does what no other girl here can. Ride with a male colleague on a motorcycle into villages where she plays stories of women who have faced harassment. In this village, they listen about a young woman who went to court and won a $200 settlement from her husband who deserted her.
When I went to people, they told me to take a stand. I got courage after listening to the program on violence against women.
Emboldened by this, another woman asks how she can seek redress. The explosive growth of mobile phones in recent years has widened the radio's reach. Women often borrow phones from their husbands to tune in, and they are beginning to file court cases or seek mediation.
For women, it has been a hugely empowering process because radio is something which gives you privacy. It gives you anonymity and it gives you information which you can even listen to when you're alone.
Change is happening, but slowly. It is a huge challenge to hire and retain women. Out of 12 employees, only 3 are women.
We employed a couple of married women, but when their husbands saw them having lunch with male colleagues in the team, they took them away.
How long Farin will continue working remains to be seen. But getting into this studio has brought her close to her childhood dream of becoming an actor. And her work has fired another goal.
I want to bring change into whichever family I marry. Their girls should go to school. Women who are being abused should get justice and should know their rights.
For this community radio, the challenge is to convince more women that, like Farin, they can break barriers and transform their lives. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Mewat, Haryana.
Coming up, a popular destination for Asian immigrants. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the Philippines' main island, including the national capital, Manila, is under a tropical cyclone warning for a typhoon hitting now. Local governments told thousands of people to evacuate vulnerable areas, such as coastal communities. The worst conditions are forecast for southeastern provinces on Luzon. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the capital of Asia America is one description used for an area spanning 36 kilometers just east of downtown Los Angeles, called the San Gabriel Valley. Close to 500,000 Asians live in this region. It's an Asian enclave, where 9 cities in the area are majority Asian. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has more on why so many Asians live there and the countries they represent.
The San Gabriel Valley, known to locals as the SGV, has been home to Mike Chow for 30 years. When he was 5 years old, his parents immigrated from Taiwan and chose the city of Walnut to settle down. It's a city that is majority Asian.
My parents, they didn't speak English at the time, so it's made it easier for them to kind of get around. It's so close to all the shopping. There's a good sense of that Asian community. It made fitting in a lot easier.
There's a largely immigrant and ethnic Chinese population in the SGV that started with a flood of people from Taiwan in the 1970s, then continued to trickle in the 80s when Chow arrived. Now he's a real estate agent and leads a multilingual team, including Roxanne Shone, who sells houses in the region.
Most of my clients are Mandarin-speaking, Chinese, but they're either living here and work here or study here, or they come to the United States just to invest, to buy investment property.
In the last 10 to 15 years, people from mainland China have become the new immigrants to the SGV. Originally from China, Sheng arrived in the U.S. for graduate school and stayed. She says there are many reasons why the SGV is attractive to the Chinese.
Everyone speaks Mandarin. They can walk into bank, post office, grocery stores. They can do everything without speaking English.
Immigrants are also attracted to Southern California's mild climate and relatively close distance to Asia when compared to other U.S. cities. For immigrants who are used to living in high-rise apartments in China,
we have plenty of single-family homes. They just buy the house, they get the land, they get the yard, and they have no neighbors up or down below them.
Immigrants from other Southeast Asian countries also live in the region.
So I speak Tagalog, the Hokkien, and Mandarin, and English.
The Asian population in the San Gabriel Valley continues to grow, because it is an area that makes the transition from an Asian culture to an American one much easier. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
This news break from VOA Asia, a medium-sized hunting dog breed called the Shiba Inu once faced extinction in Japan because of war and disease. Now the breed is a pet owner rage in Taiwan. Their penchant for the dogs reflects a liking for Japanese culture and helps sustain the once endangered species. You can find more on VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, for many Americans, the holiday season means shopping, and increasingly, online shopping. On Cyber Monday, the Monday after the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday, online retailers offer deep discounts in hopes of racking up huge sale volumes. Many shoppers in the United States say they mix online and in-person shopping to find the best deals. Michelle Quinn looked at this year's online shopping trends in the U.S.
Holiday shopping in the United States can seem like an Olympic sport. Hustling in and out of stores, scouring for deals, and more, shopping on computers, particularly on Cyber Monday, the first Monday after the U.S. Thanksgiving Day holiday. It's when online retailers offer eye-popping deals.
I think this Cyber Monday will see more and more sales. More and more people will kind of migrate to shopping online versus in-store.
In the U.S., nearly 20% of all holiday sales are expected to occur online this year. Still, many say buying stuff this way can be tedious. They miss the personal experience of being in a store, touching the object, talking to a salesperson.
I like to still go to stores and, you know, especially places like Macy's and Nordstrom and those big stores. It's nice to be able to talk to the helpers in the store and try different products, so it makes it enjoyable. Possibly even walk around with your girlfriends or your daughter.
I like a deal on a price, I'm not gonna lie about that, but like just online shopping, I would prefer like actual shopping as opposed to online shopping in general.
For many shoppers, finding that right gift is often a mixture of looking both online and in person.
I feel like Cyber Monday, I get to be like removed from all the craziness, but I still get a really good deal.
Some retailers try to blend the online and in-person shopping experience. This store in San Francisco sells electronics and other products, but doubles as a showroom. If the shopper goes home and buys the product online from Amazon, that's okay. The store shares its data with the companies behind the products.
Each one of our stores has cameras up in the ceilings here. These collect anonymous overhead data. So this is basically just measuring bodies in a space.
Some stores, such as IKEA, the furniture seller, are using augmented reality so an online shopper can see what a chair might look like in their living room. Chatbots, pre-programmed online assistants, answer shoppers' questions.
It's not human, but they've been able to like emulate a human so well and provide so much information to that bot. It really gives the customer a very good experience.
For many shoppers, Getting into the holiday spirit online is a challenge, but with a few clicks and the help of a chatbot, shoppers can get their shopping done so they can enjoy the holiday season. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
30 years ago, a deadly hurricane ripped through the beautiful city of Charleston, South Carolina, destroying many of its historic homes and buildings. A shortage of skilled artisans meant it took years to rebuild the city. Today, a generation of aspiring artists is learning traditional building skills at a local college where job placement is 100%. VOA's Julie Tabo traveled to the fast-developing coastal city to see how students and faculty at this unique college meet a growing and urgent need.
Alex Fisher grinds down an iron door handle. Jeremiah Price uses heat to soften the metal in his. Stephen Fancelli prefers working with wood, but all are enjoying the hands-on aspect of a special school in South Carolina.
I saw the school on a TV show, and my thought was, well, I wish I had known about this 10 years ago when I was actually looking at schools, and I decided to just make a change and come here.
The school is the American College of the Building Arts in the historic city of Charleston, which offers students intense hands-on training in traditional European craftsmanship. It was created after Hurricane Hugo ripped through this coastal city in 1989, destroying countless homes and historic buildings. In the aftermath, there was an urgent need for experienced artisans who knew how to rebuild the city, but there weren't enough of them. So it was a perfect opportunity for a traditional building arts school, which is the first and only four-year college in the country to offer such a program.
It's different and unique because we have blended a liberal arts education, you know, the critical thinking aspect of that, with a skill set that we teach six different skilled areas, so that a student leaves here with the art and the science of either preservation, quality construction, and the skills to be able to do it when they leave here.
Students also work off campus on local community projects. At this backyard garden in a residential area, students are building a children's playhouse using all natural materials.
So we are building with a method called rammed earth, which is a sustainable building method that goes back 7,000 years. The class is a hands-on building course where we try to give back to the community.
President Broadwater says that sense of community is important to the college.
We touch so many places and so many people, public projects that enhance the beauty of this city or state. The students are proud of actually producing something. That's why they came here. And so they can sit there and say, I made that.
Let's just put the soil right there.
Simeon Warren has been teaching at the college for 18 years.
You're working on 250-year-old monuments. The value and worth of that means you don't want to make any mistakes. That sense of worth for a person, I think, to actually know that their work is going to survive hundreds of years.
Perhaps that's why so many of the students are getting job offers even before they graduate. Lee Yarbrough has been working at this historic cemetery, helping to restore and stabilize several crumbling tombstones.
I actually already got a job offer last week, he was like, let me know if anyone else is interested in hiring you because I'll be competitive. So there's just a lot of opportunities after this.
30 years after Hurricane Hugo, Charleston is thriving. But should disaster strike again, members of its artisan community are well prepared. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Charleston, South Carolina.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You have many choices in which to follow us. You can find us on YouTube, Instagram, VOA Asia Twitter, and of course, our Facebook page named VOA Asia. Send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. We would love to hear from you. And we'd love to hear from you if you happen to be listening on the radio. Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand carries our program. Hello and welcome to everyone there listening today. We say thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Dan Crafton, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, Doug Bernard, interns Hyong, Afrin, Candice. I'm Jim Stevenson. Have a great day.